You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Well, Lionel, I'm not going to ask you where we are because we are in Betty's. It's a pointless question. But I walked into Betty's tonight, and who did I find but a Frenchman drinking red wine in an English tea shop?
That can only be one man.
This is bullshit, isn't it? Yeah, well, let's start the words in style, you know.
Swiss wine. Swiss wine, is it, Francois?
Well, I wanted to go for the Swiss wine first because I love Swiss wine, actually. And they do, I mean, that's one of the unheralded countries of wine. They actually do pretty good, you know, Pinot Noirs and stuff. And the whites, I don't like that much, but the reds are quite surprising. So I nearly went for it. And then I saw a French one that's not far from home. And well, you know, having traveled 11 hours to get here, I said, okay, let's stick a little bit. My stomach still needs a little bit of French wine, so I went for the French for now.
Well, but you've just ordered a bottle of good Yorkshire Timothy Taylor's Landlord.
Absolutely.
Just to settle you down and get you back. Let's remind the listeners that you're spiritual home almost is Yorkshire, having spent some time in Doncaster as a young man.
That's right. I spent a year in Doncaster as a, you know, as a kind of French, what they used to call them, assistant, which meant I was kind of doing what, conversation classes or, you know, silly classes with young people in Doncaster. I even was a DJ there for Northern Soul stuff, you know. So I that's the odd, very, very odd thing. I was bringing old soul singles back from Marseille to Northern England, you know. So it was actually Southern Soul, more than Northern Soul. But yeah, I ended up being a Northern Soul DJ for a couple of months in a huge disco in Doncaster, the name of which I can't remember, but there you are.
And you've come to Harrogate to see Julian Alaphilippe win the rainbow jersey on Sunday, of course.
I don't really think that's going to happen, unfortunately, but who knows? Who knows?
Well, a big Yorkshire bienvenue, Francois. We should tell people it's Francois Thomazeau, who obviously joins us for our Tour de France coverage and has come over to the Worlds. You'll be joining us tomorrow for the World Championships, our bike ride and an event in East Yorkshire. And then on Friday at the Royal Hall in Harrogate, which is going to be a great event. We've got Matt White coming for that as well. Tickets are still available because there are 900 seats. We've got over 500 people coming. It'll be great. But if you still fancy getting a ticket, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. Live events down the side, click on that and it'll take you to the live events page.
The fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our title sponsor. Got your Rafa kit packed for tomorrow. Lionel, the Yorkshire collection, perhaps. I've got my Yorkshire Rafa Yorkshire casquette.
Well, Rich, not knowing how the weather would pan out, I've come prepared. I've got, you know, lightweight stuff. I've got a good rain jacket, Rafa rain jacket that I can wear. I've got my Rafa bib tights just in case it's a bit chilly when we roll out. But I'm hoping that the weather is nice enough that I can wear my Rafa custom black and yellow striped jersey, which I got made to commemorate Watford's 6-0 defeat in the FA Cup final in May. But they turned out to be pretty popular. I advertised on Twitter to say, well, I'll get some of these jerseys made. And maybe 15 or 20 people ordered a jersey and they turned up.
Don't know if that lovely piano music is coming through, but can you name that tune? And if you can, does that mean that Rowan Dennis is about to appear? Because it's We Are the Champions, isn't
it? That's absolutely right. Which doesn't apply to... no, nothing.
Absolutely no link to Lionel was talking about a moment or two ago. But it was supposed to be a little link to the bike racing, the Hampstead, which we haven't mentioned yet. The time trial. I mean, time trial, an entertaining race. And not a surprise winner, perhaps, defending champion Rowan Dennis. But he hasn't raced since he went missing. during the Tour de France mid-stage. He rode today on a BMC bike, not a team bike.
Is it official that he was a BMC bike?
I think it's pretty official. Remco Evenepoel was second, 19 years old. Astonishing performance for him. I was at the Junior Conference, which the UCI organise every year, hosted by Seb Piquet. And it's compulsory that the junior riders who are here all go to that. We'll hear a bit more about this later on, but Evenepoel went straight from his press conference to there. And he's a very mature guy. Just an event as well where there were people there who met his grandparents at the finish. And I thought, oh, that's wow, his grandparents. And then I realised his grandparents are probably about the same age as me.
Oh, well.
Yeah, probably younger than me.
What did we make of the time trial, though, Lionel?
Well, we said yesterday, didn't we, that if Rowan Dennis was the Rowan Dennis that we saw this time last year, he would take some beating. And, well, he said afterwards that it was the best result of his career today, probably because of the turbulent weeks he's had since pulling out of the Tour de France in, let's face it, quite unusual circumstances. A lot of dissatisfaction with his Bahrain Merida bike and kit and just the overall package. But I think also some aspects of, his not managing to sort of have the kind of the mental focus as well. And I think he's spent time since the Tour de France sort of coming back down from what must have been a pretty stressful few days there at the Tour and recalibrating and kind of putting everything back together. And he actually said in the mix zone afterwards that it was really relatively recently that he felt that everything was kind of back on track again. September the 15th, I think it was, he said, which is only 10 days ago, when he felt, yes, I'm ready, I can go back to the World Championships and I feel like I can win a gold medal and a rainbow jersey. And really, you say exciting racing. Now, it was incident-packed, but really the result wasn't in doubt from the very earliest time checks we saw once Dennis was on the road. It was a commanding victory, and I think the most interesting aspects of that are, of the result, are the people who were on the podium with him. Evenepoel, I mean, this time last year was riding the junior events, and he has now announced himself as a real elite-level talent. And Alex Dowsett made the point that in that period in August when he won the time trial at the European Championships, he won the San Sebastian Classic and he won the Tour of Belgium, by rights, those three events should be won by different riders. And in fact, he puts together the whole package. And, I don't think that's the last time that we're going to see Remco Evenepoel on the podium in an elite World Championships, is it? I mean, at the moment, the world looks to be his oyster.
Yeah, can I make a point, a quick one? There's always been, for a long time, kind of a dispute. I mean, it's not no longer a dispute because the cycling calendar being what it is, but about the date of the Worlds at the end of the season in October. I don't think it affects very much the Sunday race as such, the normal race, let's say, because actually you need the WorldTAC can be a good preparation for that, the Canadian races. I mean, you need lots of mileage to perform well, at a 250k circuit race, but it probably does affect the time trial Worlds, because I mean lots of good time trialists were not here again because they had a long season, because they rode the Grand Tours. We saw Roglic, being absolutely nowhere. I mean, in his best, Tony Martin is past his prime, but he also, worked a lot in the Tour and
Roglic almost beat Dennis. I mean,
he finished, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's right.
Unfortunately, Roglic
that's
set
right.
3 minutes earlier.
That's right. But coming back to my point, as you see what I mean. I mean, obviously, if you ride the Vuelta, which is pretty close to the Worlds in a way, and if you go on or if you have a very strong season coming up to the Worlds, you probably will perform well on the Sunday, but there's very very little chances that you're going to do well in the time trial. And except for Evenepoel, who is quite extraordinary, Dennis specialist, Ghana specialists. We saw it yesterday with the women, the specialists win. I mean, these are people coming from the track. And so I don't know if it's a problem or not, but it's a little bit of a problem that the words, we don't have Tom Dumoulin, we don't have, there's lots of these guys or Thomas or many others. I'm not, in a way, it undervalues a little bit the TT words.
Well,
but I would say that for Dennis, ironically, he has had the opportunity to prepare perfectly for this. You know, without any races since the tour, lots of training on his time trial bike. You know, it's such a specific specialist event that, you know, doing the Canadian races or other road races wouldn't have been ideal preparation. Whereas he's had the opportunity.
The question I'm kind of you know, raising is it a good idea to have the TT words and the roads words at the same in the same week? Because see what I mean?
It's interesting because I was thinking today about how, you know, this is the biggest individual time trial of the year. The trend over recent years at the Grand Tours has been to shorten the distance, and as Alex Dowsett said, put a big old climb in the time trials, because the Grand Tours want the time trial stages to maintain the suspense rather than crack the general classification. So they don't really want the 54 kilometer Miguel Indurain, Jan Ulrich style time trials, or Lance Armstrong style time trials, where one rider could absolutely break everybody else and you know, either confirm their dominance in the mountains or assert their dominance on the GC. And so we've seen this trend of the time trials at the Tour being almost like sporting courses, as we say in England, where there's a climb in the middle or you know, it's a race where there's even perhaps a bit of doubt over whether the riders would ride a time trial bike on those climbs. And then we come to the end of the season and we have a 54 kilometer test that's over an hour and 8 minutes or whatever of racing. It's a very specific type of test. Everyone kind of said it's a fair test of ability on the day because the course was fantastic. It was a real, you know, it tested different abilities across the 54 kilometers. But I agree with you, Francois, you know, it's really reduced down the number of potential contenders. And I think we see with Roglic, who's just won the Vuelta, clearly a world-class time trialist, but didn't have enough gas in the tank to compete over this distance today. And I do wonder whether back 20, 30 years ago, when we had the Grand Prix des Nations and the Grand Prix Eddy Merckx, two standalone time trial events, and you could kind of weigh up who's the overall best time trialist of the year.
Yeah, but the Grand Prix des Nations was much earlier in the season, so you could prepare for it specifically and then go ahead with the Grand Tours, which is... and next year with the Olympics, I'm sure the Olympic goal will affect the way the preparation of the riders and probably affect the Grand Tours as well. I mean, we're heading towards, you know, a direction when actually if somebody's real goal in the season is to win either the TT Worlds or the Olympic goal on track or the TT, it will need specific training and it would probably mean sacrificing your chances on the road.
Rohan Dennis, I mean, Lionel, you spoke to him at the end. I mean, what a story, really. And he was very emotional at the end. His family were there. His agent, manager, Andrew McQuaid, was there. Team Dennis kit they were wearing. This was a big deal to him. He won last year, but this clearly meant a lot because you wouldn't say his career was on the line, but, you know, the guy's got some problems to resolve. He's still under contract for Bahrain Merida next year. We understand he'll ride for Bahrain Merida. There'll be a new regime at Bahrain Merida, which might help him. But you spoke to him at the finish, I think.
Well, I didn't actually speak to him, but there was a big huddle around Dennis. He was obviously the man in demand at the finish. And, well, let's first of all hear what he said.
Biggest win of my career, to be honest with you. It's been tough, but all the hard work and all the hard times have been worth it. So very, very happy with everything. There's been a lot of work done off the bike mentally to get me prepared just to line up here, let alone win. So really it's a reminder that it wasn't just my body. My body was always good. It was a lot of work off the bike from my sports psychologist and David Spindler, and and almost a bit of a thank you as well for what he had done for me. It's too hard to explain, to be honest. It's obviously it's in very, very basic terms a lot of support, to be honest, to get me to believe and be more confident and not be so negative in my head, to be more positive about the good things that are going on in my life. I knew I was on a good one. I was comfortable with the pace I was setting, but you just never know. You just never know until you get that first time check, and it was 20 seconds up. I'm thinking, well, I've still got more to give, so that's good. Then we had another time check along the road, and I was 57 seconds up. I'm like, well, there's not much time where they can really take out of me, so I just have to be calm, don't take risks down the hills, and just get into my rhythm whenever I can as quick as possible. Don't lose any speed, and I should win. I was expecting, obviously, maybe at most, a lot like last year, I was seeing 10, 20 seconds. I was real surprised to see my two guys in front of me, obviously Roglic and Kampenaerts. When I called Kampenaerts, I was surprised, but then I saw he had a bit of skin missing off his right hip, so I sort of put two and two together. He had crashed. But Roglic was a real surprise for me. I was expecting him to really push me, but coming off the Vuelta, and really in hindsight, it was a really tough race for him and for everybody there. So for him to come out and back this up, I would have been real impressed if he actually did beat me. I'm confident in myself. I'm confident that, well, basically I'm here to stay. I'm here to continue to win. I'm continuing to basically push to be the best in the world, not just for the next 12 months, but in the future as well. So for myself, yes, I know I will be here for a lot longer. I'm not going anywhere.
There were a few things there about what Rowan Dennis said that interested me. This is extraordinary. Sorry listeners, Richard has finished his beer and has now just poured from my bottle of beer. I mean, that's assuming quite a lot there, Richard.
But I thought you'd be distracted talking about Rowan Dennis. Well, it seemed like a good moment to
Rowan
do that.
Dennis pulled out of the Tour de France in really quite troubling kind of circumstances. It was hard not to feel a lot of sympathy and empathy for him, because clearly there were a lot of things that weren't right. You know, he wasn't, you know, he pretty much downed tools, didn't he, and left the race in a state of total dissatisfaction with himself, with his bike, with his equipment and kit. And we wondered whether these problems could get resolved. We know that Rod Ellingworth is coming into Bahrain Merida next year, and we know that Rod Ellingworth wants to keep Rowan Dennis, and having won the world title, doubly so, I'm sure. But it was very interesting that Dennis rode on a BMC bike today, not on a Merida bike. He rode a casque helmet, not the team issue helmet. And, you know, he's clearly a sort of hypersensitive character. And just from looking at the way and listening to how he answered the questions, he wasn't giving too much away, but it clearly is still in a process of resolving some of the issues that he's had. And winning the rainbow jersey will no doubt give him a stronger hand, a stronger bargaining position when it comes to sorting out his future.
And he might get to wear the rainbow jersey in a time trial.
He may well do, because that was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pulling out of the Tour pretty much on the eve of a time trial in the Tour de France, which he could have won given with good form.
Just riding a time trial at the Tour de France in the rainbow jersey is not something that many riders get to do in their careers. So
might do it again.
He might now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The problem is I don't know the UCI rules enough, but I know for sure in another sport I know well, which is alpine skiing. If you know that there was a time, it's changed a little bit, but it needs to be announced at the start of the season. But if you perform with a different brand from the one you're supposed to be using, you're out. So I'm not sure it applies in this way. But I mean, it could be. I mean, Dennis could start a precedent. Other riders could tell their teams, right? You know, your I'm not naming any brands, but I mean, you know, the bikes you're giving us are not good enough. I want to have my own bike sponsor. I mean, you know,
not a great day to be selling Merida time trial bikes, is it?
But today, it's clearly not good enough for him. And I think if you're an elite athlete and you want the best, and you know that there's a difference in equipment, I think that psychologically that's hard. And I think it's very easy to transfer other psychological issues onto a dissatisfaction with kit. I mean,
well, time trial especially. I mean, time trialists are an unusual breed. You know, they're very precise and everything has to be perfect. And you know, I think some people maybe didn't take his dissatisfaction seriously at the tour. That's a nice little jig you're doing there, Lionel. But you know, he wouldn't have wanted to ride at the tour without everything being perfect. So,
no, and just to go back on to what you were saying, Francois, about the strength of field and so on, I don't think that detracts from the performance of Rowan Dennis today. No. Because he was exceptional, and that was a really interesting, tough course that contained a lot of elements. I mean, we saw Yves Lampaert had a bad fall, Victor Campenaerts had a bad fall.
Sobering moment when Yves Lampaert like hobbled into the line very, very slowly, and still at 10 minutes down, still averaged 41 kilometers an hour.
Mm.
But yeah, he crashed, Campenaerts crashed.
And even the gap, I mean, you know, 130 on Evenepoel is a lot. So you know, probably with
109 to be.
Is it?
Yeah. 109.
Anyway, more than 1 minute on Evenepoel. Yeah, I mean, even with, you know, Dumoulin, whoever you want, Chris Froome, I mean, you know, Thomas, I mean, other specialist riders, I think Dennis would, as you said, would have been very, very difficult to beat. My last question is, how do you think this will unfold for Dennis with the Baron Merida? Because I mean, they must come up with something. I mean, money, obviously, but I mean, in terms of equipment, they must work very hard on a new bike. I mean, what are the what can they do to convince him to stay?
I mean, Rod Ellingworth's coming in. He's going to be around the World Championships on Friday. Actually, I spoke to him today. He starts officially next Tuesday, I believe, with the team. But McLaren are obviously heavily involved. Now, McLaren's business is aerodynamics and engineering and equipment. So it's although Merida are the bike manufacturer, it's sort of embarrassing for them too. And we understand that McLaren, who are employing Rod Ellingworth, will be a far more prominent backer of the team next year. The team might even be known as McLaren.
Mm.
So you would think that they would want to find a solution to this. What that solution is, I don't know.
No, it's it is a tricky one, because a bike takes time to develop. I mean, you can't just summon one up over a winter. It would be difficult to do that. But you know, if you've got a talent, then you have to. And Rod Ellingworth is very good at accommodating talent, and maybe there's a kind of wacky third way that we're not, you know, we're not aware of and we can't think of at the moment that could get the best out of Dennis. Because if you've got an athlete like that, surely you've got to give the athlete the best possible conditions to get the best possible results.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet interrupting our World Championship coverage to remind me to tell you that tonight's episode is sponsored by the Watt Bike Atom.
That's right, Richard. Anyone who listened to our Tour de France coverage will be perhaps familiar with the Watt Bike Atom, because they sponsored quite a number of our episodes during the tour. If you miss those, well, the Watt Bike Atom is an indoor training device, which means you don't have to put your own bike onto a turbo trainer. It's basically a standalone indoor trainer, and it hooks up very, very easily with all of the different training apps. I'm an absolute, you know, dunderbrain when it comes to technology, Richard, as you know, but I managed to hook it up to Zwift or Trainer Road in a matter of clicks, in a matter
of
minutes.
Lionel.
And well, with the nights drawing in and very difficult to ride, you know, after work outdoors, turbo training or indoor training really comes into its own. So now is the time to start thinking about locking yourself away in the pain cave, and why not do so with the Watt Bike Atom. Richard, you also used Watt Bike's own software, and you found out about the pedaling effectiveness score, which wasn't that impressive in your case, was it?
I found out how ineffective my pedaling was.
Indeed.
Lots to work on.
But Wattbike have had a really successful week here at the World Championships because on Sunday, two of their riders from the Hoop Wattbike track team were part of the mixed relay, and one of those riders was 14th in today's men's elite time trial.
I guess normally it would be something like sprint sessions or for the erg mode, the simulated sessions. But realistically, if it's when you're in a pinch and you're in a rush for time and it's just set up, it's there, it's easy to get access to, and you're just on and riding straight away. Hi, I'm John Archibald, and I use the Wattbike to train for the track and team pursuit. This is all sort of a pedal revolution, diagnostics and analytics and that kind of stuff, if you want to delve into that. Normally for us, it's just the fact that, say, like the stability of the bike, for example, you can really put out some big power. So if you want to do some max rev outs or something that isn't as stable on a normal indoor turbo trainer, then that's what we use it for, yeah.
So if you want to get prepared for your autumn or winter training using the Wattbike Atom, Wattbike is offering a free essentials pack which contains a Wattbike heart rate strap, a Wattbike floor mat, a Muckoff care pack to keep your bike in good nick, and a Wattbike water bottle. All of that is worth £125, and you can get that when you buy a Wattbike Atom in September. So the deadline for that is coming up pretty shortly. I think Monday is September 30th, so you need to get in before Monday and go and visit wattbike.com/TCP19. That's wattbike.com/TCP19, and use the code TCP19 at checkout.
Well, the other really eye-catching ride was Remco Evenepoel, and he was second at 1:09. Filippo Ganna, the young Italian on Team Ineos, a third at 1:55. It was very close between him, Patrick Bevan, and Alex Dowsett. Lawson Craddock, bit of a surprise as well, was in sixth. But yeah, Dowsett, Bevan, and Ganna, only a few seconds separating them for the bronze medal. Very good performance from Alex Dowsett. Shall we actually hear from him? You spoke to him at the finish, Lionel.
Happy with that then?
Yeah, I am. Before TT, I don't like putting a target on where I want to finish, because I want to win. Everyone on that start line should want to win. And then looking at what's realistic, I'd have said top 10 would be a good day, so I'm happy with that. It's just nice for it all to come together.
The trend for time trials in Grand Tours is they're getting shorter and shorter, so does that make preparation
hillier
for something?
And hillier as well. They seem to keep putting these whacking great big mountains in. Not big, too long for me. This is nice. Yeah, a bit different. Long and flattish. I said this is a brilliant course. So sort of it was a tale of three sections. Flat to start, where you sort of kind of settle in, try not to burn all your matches and overcook yourself. And then the middle section was really on and off, sort of more so than I'd anticipated, and I made a good job of that. Yeah, and I think the middle section's where I really sort of did my... That's where I was good, I guess.
But does it make it harder to prepare? You don't get many opportunities in competition for that sort of length of effort.
Rowan's seems to have done all right with zero sort of competitions of that effort. So, yeah, time trialing's an art, so it's you can train for it without doing racing. And probably given the choice, I would adopt for the same sort of approach as Victor and Rowan, but it's got the day job as well.
I guess that throws the Olympics into as a possibility. Olympics have this ridiculous rule where you have to be a part of the road race team as well, and we have some quite strong road races in the UK, so it makes life more difficult for sure. I think it's a ridiculous rule, because it's like saying to Usain Bolt, if you want to do the 100 metres, you've got to do the 800 and 1500 as well, mate. Because it's a different sport. Like, none of these boys in the top 10 are going to be favourites for the road race. I just have to sit down and look at it and see, really. Have a sit down with British Cycling and work out what we can do, because... It's a 2-minute gap to Rowan. It's a minute to Remco. He's probably not going to get any slower. But
you know, it's, I've moved forward, so hopefully.
Yeah, a significant day for Great Britain, British cycling, because that guarantees two places in the time trial in the Olympics next year in Tokyo. There's a whole kind of conundrum and a jigsaw of selection for Tokyo next year, because the time trial riders have to also be part of the road race team, so that makes selection interesting. What I gathered from our friend Renat Schotter, who I was off playing darts this afternoon while you were doing your event at the Katusha
Cafe. Well, I was working, Lionel.
You're not on podcast business, though, were you? You were moonlighting. But I was playing darts with Ned Bolton and Renat Schotter of Sportsa, the Belgian broadcasters, and obviously Victor Campenaerts, who would have been one of the favourites, or was one of the favourites for a medal, had a crash, had a nasty gash on the right hand side of his thigh, and finished in 11th place.
Buttock, I think, is. It was more buttock.
Was it more buttock?
I would say buttock.
Okay, listeners, was it buttock or thigh? Tweet buttock or thigh @cycling_podcast.
Retweet for buttock, like for thigh.
But if he'd finished in eighth position, he would have guaranteed his own place in the Olympics in Tokyo, I gather. And so, you know, that's significant, because he may not get selected if...
He had a bit of a shocker, didn't he?
Yeah.
Almost, he's joined Dimension Data next year. It's almost like he's... trying out. Sorry, Dimension Data. But I want to mention John Archibald, who we heard from a little bit earlier. But John Archibald, 14th on the day. Now, he was called up just a couple of weeks ago to replace Geraint Thomas. If you look at the riders around him, all World Tour riders, you know, he was 14th. Primoz Roglic, 12th. Luke Durbridge, 13th. Dylan van Baarle, 15th. He's been going well. Casper Asgreen just in Pierre Latour. Chad Haga won a time trial stage at the Giro. Exceptional, because this is a guy, I mean, you say that the riders who will ride in the Olympic Games will have to ride the road race as well. He's not going to get that opportunity. So for him to go from riding domestically and on the track to finishing 14th in that sort of company, that was an amazing ride by him. Fantastic.
Yeah.
But Evenepoel, I mean, for a 19-year-old, we know he's an exceptional rider, but the time trial is the race of truth. You know, if you can ride a time trial like that and put out that sort of power, his potential. He came to, as I say, to the junior conference afterwards, and he was asked by Seb Piquet, who was hosting it, what his ambitions were. He said he wants to win all three Grand Tours. Now, the one thing we've not seen him do is climb the big mountain passes. But if you look at his build and his ability, I don't imagine that would be beyond him. He is an absolute phenomenon.
I mean, you know, it's not my theory, it's facts. The best Grand Tour riders in history have always been time trialists turned climbers. So lose a little bit of weight, work specifically on your, you know, on your pedaling and the frequency of pedaling. There's lots of adjustment to be made, but everybody, you know, they all made those from...
Time trial is a key ingredient, isn't it?
It is. From Coppi to Bradley Wiggins and Tom Dumoulin. I mean, these guys were started as time trialists and grew into Grand Tour winners. There's no reason why Remco Evenepoel is not going to do that. You use the adjective exceptional. It's you know, we tend to be a little bit lyrical from time to time, and not on the podcast, of course, but with
I thought Francois was going to correct my English there at one point.
No, not at all, but I wanted to point out that this year we had a 22-year-old guy winning the Tour de France. We had a 19-year-old woman winning the TT Worlds. We had a 19-year-old guy finishing second in the TT Worlds. And you know, look at the Vuelta, you know, Pogačar and all these guys. I mean, if you add to that the emergence of new countries, I mean, Colombia is not new, but I mean, they won the Tour now, and Ecuador. In a way, everything we thought we knew about cycling is kind of being, reshuffled this very season. So we can really say that for once, because all these people are exceptions. Even Geraint Thomas last year winning his first Tour, over 30, was kind of... different. So, in many, many ways, the season is about to end, and we've been living an exceptional season.
And yet, Evenepoel is from a country that is the absolute heart of cycling culture.
That's right, yeah.
And the comparisons with, you know, Eddy Merckx and everybody from Belgium will be made. And, well, back in January when, you know, I had the sense that the De Koninck Quick-Step team launch in Spain, that they were trying to kind of shelter Evenepoel from, you know, too much expectation in his first year as a, not just his first year as a pro, his first year as a senior. That's the thing. And Patrick Lefevre, the boss of De Koninck Quick-Step, made some pretty strident comments about the fact that he was maybe a bit heavy, Evenepoel. And you just think, well, is that the sort of messaging that a 19-year-old needs to hear in their first year as a pro? And then we see the results that he's got over the course of certainly August, you know, that kind of strange hinterland period of the season between the Tour and the Vuelta, where there are opportunities for riders to make a bit of a name for themselves. But I mean, we saw Mathieu van der Poel win stages of the Arctic Tour a couple of years ago, and we thought that was impressive. But Evenepoel won San Sebastian, and not just, he didn't just win it, did he? He absolutely trounced everybody. And he's gone from a gold medal and a rainbow jersey as a junior last year to a silver medal in the same discipline this year. And can you think of another?
That's not happened before. Like, as simple as that. It's just not happened. I mean, Greg LeMond was a similar kind of phenomenon as a very young rider, but he was held back quite a lot. And I think it's interesting because you mentioned Pogacar, you know, who's finished on the podium at the Vuelta aged 20 something. And so on the one, I mean, Evenepoel was asked also by Seb whether he'd ride a Grand Tour next year, and the Olympics are a big focus for him, and that might affect whether or not he rides a Grand Tour. But if you look at Pogacar finishing third in the Vuelta age 20, you think, well, Evenepoel at 20, actually, again, the old rules don't apply. In the old days, you'd have kept him another year and maybe ridden 10 days, but maybe there's no reason for him not to ride a Grand Tour now. So he might not next year because I think the Olympics and the Worlds are a big target for him. But the following year, I think he'll certainly ride a Grand Tour. And, you know, who knows? I mean, a word for Filippo Ganna as well, though, another young rider on Team Ineos. He was at UAE, wasn't he, before?
Yeah, one year.
A very good time trialist. But I didn't know that his family history.
Well, he bears the same name as the first winner of the Giro, but apparently they're not related. And
Luigi Ganna?
I think it was Luigi Ganna, yeah. And but his father won a medal at rowing at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, and so, well, obviously, you know, a sporting family. And when he joined Team Sky before he was Team Ineos, I mean, the Italians were quite angry at saying, because he's seen in Italy as the new Francesco Moser. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I mean, regardless of the past, Moser were also an exceptional rider. And so once again an up and coming rider. I think he's
23.
You know, with exceptional talent. He's big. He's a big guy. You know, more the Dumoulin type than a guy for sure that especially we're riding for Ineos, that in the future will have a major role to play. So same thing here. Obviously, given his three times Pursuit World Champion. Obviously, his target next season as well will be the Olympics. But God knows what the future holds for him.
Well, let me tell you that Ganna was not the only Italian lighting up Harrogate with his presence today. Welcome to Yorkshire. Ciro.
Dear listeners, welcome also by me, this marvelous country. Also, the weather is not extremely fine, but I love Great Britain, I love United Kingdom.
What do you love most about it?
You know, the landscapes, also the people, the atmosphere, I definitely go with United Kingdom in my life.
Now, Ciro, inevitably you're staying in the Italian team hotel, shadowing Riders, but not Nibali. Why is he not here?
Yes, his shape was not at his best, and maybe also the parkour doesn't exactly fit him. We have also to consider that he had a really consistent season because he did Giro and Tour, and now his goal for the last part of the season, Tour of Lombardy on the 12th of October.
I was a bit confused because I know that the Olympic road race is a big goal for him next year, isn't it? And this would have seemed to me to have been a good rehearsal for that.
I mean, we have to consider that the Olympic parkour is tougher than here, and maybe at the end he was not convinced 100% to came here in Yorkshire. So certainly we know that in his career he missed so far a great achievement with the Italian national team. He arrived fourth at the World in Florence 6 years ago, and definitely he will go for a gold medal in the Olympics, but also in the next Worlds in Switzerland, which the parkour is better for him.
Who will lead the Italian team then on Sunday?
Matteo Trentin is the clear leader, especially in this second part of the season. He's been very good, a stage winner in the Tour de France. Also, he won a stage in the Tour of Britain, so he will be the captain of Italy. Maybe the second bet, especially if the weather will be with rain and tough, will be Sonny Colbrelli. It's good, definitely, in this condition. Certainly, Trentin, I can consider him, I don't want to say an underdog, but an outsider, in the sense that there are some guys as Van der Poel and Sagan, Matthews, Gilbert are better than him. He is in a second row.
Trentin, I saw him tweeting about Greta Thunberg yesterday. I didn't know he was so political.
Yeah, I mean, he's very... is very interested in some topics. For example, Italy, there is a weekly magazine called Internazionale. This magazine sums up the main articles of foreign press about some topics, and he reads Internazionale every week, more or less. It's also very interesting, very... He speaks sometimes about the safety of for riders. You know that also in Italy, not only in Italy, there is the problem of safety of riders, possible of incident with car. And so he's a kind in this field. He can be a real leader because he's a political view of life that normally the majority of riders doesn't have, but he has this vision.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. Very grateful to them for their support. And you can get 25% off with the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Got my Science in Sport products for tomorrow's 75-kilometer ride, hopefully not in the rain, and that'll fuel me through the day. Speaking of fueling, we're going to come back here for high tea on Friday, aren't we? Aren't we? Well, we've got to introduce Francois to that experience, I think.
Have you sampled an English cream tea before?
I've done high teas since the age of 8 or something.
Oh. You know, when I was more high teas than me then.
Yeah, I mean, it was when I was a kid on the holidays with my parents. I mean, we were always spending holidays in England most of the time. And the great thing about that was to go to a little pub in the country and have high tea.
So. Yeah, we were thinking we were going to give you a new cultural experience, Francois, but you've seen it all, you've done it all, haven't you? Honestly. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I went to the junior conference earlier on, and they had Cecilia Utrup-Ludwig there, who was an attendee at that conference in 2012. Remco Evenepoel came along. I was very impressed by his maturity and his eloquence, actually. I mean, he does come across as a very guy who really knows what he's doing and knows where he's going. there is a lot of pressure on him. The one, it was interesting the things that they covered in the conference. They covered doping, anti-doping, sorry, not doping. They didn't instruct them on doping. They covered anti-doping. They had the UCI legal counsel there, Justin Lessard, who was interesting and sort of, you know, deliberately putting the frighteners on them a bit, saying, "I'm the guy you never want to get a phone call from." And he told them all about how anti-doping works at the UCI and about why they shouldn't dope. I mean, Seb said, why should riders not dope? And they actually gave a very interesting answer. He gave out 3 points. We will catch you, he said. He talked about the misery of doping and he's seen what it does to riders and who sort of lose a sense of themselves. He spoke about Stefan Denifil, who's been caught recently. He was very good, actually. And they did a section on communication and working with the media and a little bit on the environment and their responsibilities with bidons and so on, what they should do with their wrappers, which I thought was interesting. On the communication side, you know, they were sort of giving them tips about dealing with journalists and so on, and I would have probably put it slightly differently, if I'm honest.
Why? What do they say that you didn't agree with?
I think that sometimes they present the media and journalists as something negative and something that writers have to be very careful about. Mm, and actually, that what's that?
As a trap.
Well, yeah, I think the problem with that, and I spoke to Cecilia Trip-Ludwig about this afterwards, because one of the great things about her is that in her interviews, she's just herself, and she's very, very open, and she says whatever's on her mind, and that's what makes her, gives her, you know, the profile that she has partly, and also makes her very appealing to us. If we want to go and get an interesting interview, we go to Cecilia Trip-Ludwig. So it's in a writer's interest to be open and to be, you know, as unfiltered as possible, really. And I don't think telling young writers to be very careful about what they say is all that helpful.
No, I agree. It was really interesting, actually, in the mix zone. Primoz Roglic came through having had a bad day, not a good day. Perhaps wasn't expecting to do much better than he did, but
He smile?
He came through. Do you know what? He said more in a few minutes there today than he said through the whole of the Giro and the Vuelta put together, I suspect. And I think that's because it's his last event of the year. There's no
pressure
tomorrow.
Off.
You know, he talked. All right, he didn't say anything particularly interesting, but he was a bit more expansive and a bit more open. Certainly spent a bit more time. During the Giro and the Vuelta, we saw him giving, you know, 30 seconds of just, you know, really clipped non-answers to real non-questions. And I think there's an element with riders who, when they're so focused, they're so in the moment of trying to win a Grand Tour, that actually they do see these, you know, the media obligations as something that has to be just negotiated as quickly as possible, so they can get back in the bus and start eating their rice and their recovery drink and so on. Well, and so you see a slightly different side in different circumstances.
Let's take an example, because I was talking of an exceptional season, but there's a sport that's going through its most exceptional period ever, and it's tennis. And why is it so? Because take Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray, they understood it, and I think it was planned by the ATP. Say interesting things in the press conferences. These guys are interested not only because they're exceptional sports people, not because they're only because of the rivalries and the game they play, but also because they're outspoken, because their press conferences are never dull or boring. They used to be boring, you know. I remember tennis press conferences like 20 years ago were terrible. They're not anymore. Like they've been briefed to be interesting. Give something
is a really interesting point. We can't sort of expand on it right now, but maybe we could in a future episode. But cycling is competing against other sports. It isn't competing against itself. And it's really odd in the mix zone to see the UCI's press guy trying to wrap up interviews. Like, what's the point of that? Yeah. You know, what is the point of that, really? I completely completely agree with you there that these are the personalities that can project, you know, the sport to a large audience and try to give as much as possible.
Well, I
so
mentioned Cecilia,
you get some headlines.
Cecilia Trip-Ludwig's interview after La Course last year travelled around the world, and a lot of people will have seen that interview who didn't necessarily see the race. Mm. And it did an awful lot for her and for the race. Mm. Not everybody can be like that, but the there's real value in that and in being open and honest and unfiltered. And the more riders that we have like that, the better the sport will be, the more interesting it will be. We were going to play out with a bit from the conference. I spoke to a few riders afterwards. Juniors. I mean, one of the things that struck me about it was just seeing all the juniors who are competing here together in a room and being struck by the sheer number of them and how young they look and all this kind of talent and this commitment and this enthusiasm in this one room was quite inspiring, really. That, you know, who you don't know which of those people will make it, but in that room were future stars of the sport. I think it's a good initiative that the UCI putting this on. So I spoke to a few of the riders afterwards, and Cecilia Trip-Ludwig, who was the professional rider who was speaking to them as well.
Bonjour à tous, hello, and welcome to the 2019 edition of the Junior Conference. So good to see so many familiar faces, young faces.
I'm Lara Gillespie. I just did the time trial and I'm doing the road race on Friday.
What did you think of the conference?
I thought it was really good, yeah, really beneficial and good to learn some of the top tips from top riders and get a good idea of what their life is about and their training and their race season and everything. It was good hearing from the actual riders and then also just getting given advice about all different aspects of cycling. I thought the whole thing was good overall, yeah.
I'm the guy you never want to have on the phone. Basically, if I call
you,
if I call you, you're in trouble because I'm in charge of prosecuting the cases of sanctioning athletes who we find out are doping or have committed an anti-doping rule violation.
It was fun, yeah. It was fun watching the interview, and it's nice always to have women in there. I'm Catalina Soto, and I ride for Chile, and I did the time trial, and I'm doing the road race on Friday. I think maybe the doping, when you can always see where to report and where to find the substances, because I didn't know there was an app, so I actually have the police downloaded in all the languages, so I just put it there when I buy something new. So I think that was really helpful and interesting.
Today someone comes to you and says, I've got the substance right now, they can't detect it, or blah, blah, blah. Well, you should think about the fact that you never know, because in 2 or 3 years, if the methods of detection improve, you could be caught.
I'm Alfie George, and I'm riding the Junior World Road Race Championships.
What do you make of Evenepoel up there, a year older than you guys? Is that an inspiration, or is it a little bit scary?
No, I suppose it shows that, like, it's possible to just, make it from our age group, and, it's good to see him there, because we were there with him last year.
One day you will need each other, also in the races. I can tell you that, because sometimes it's really hard to do everything alone or to burn some energy for nothing. So actually in life, just have fun, be kind with everybody, because one day you will need each other, and that's all I can say.
Cecily, you had an important role to play there on stage, inspiring people. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, it was really good fun. I mean, and people, I mean, they also seemed to be listening a bit, I don't know, with everyone. But yeah, it was really good fun, and I enjoyed it.
Do you quite enjoy being, with the Danish team as well here, helping a little bit? You mentioned 2012, you were here in part of the conference yourself. But do you enjoy helping younger riders?
Yeah, I do. And I really like, being with the federation, and you really, you feel there's a team, and yeah, I don't know, it's a different kind of unit feeling that this is your country that you're representing. Yeah, I really like that. And I like that it's, men and women and in different ages, and that, the younger ones, they'll also come to ask questions, or I like that.
And you ducked out the question about who's going to win on Saturday there, but what are your thoughts about the course and your own chances?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess, yeah, everyone's eyes will be on the Netherlands, so and that's also where we'll be looking. And I mean, I'm coming into this and really excited. I mean, I haven't raced for quite some time now, so I am really like a racehorse wanting to race. and you know, so yeah. And I'm just gonna take it pretty chilled and just happy to be there and just gonna give full gas.
We look forward to your post race interview.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes well, we cross fingers.
Little flavour there from the UCI Junior Conference. Well, it's great to have Francois with us, isn't it, Lionel, for the rest of the World Championships?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, it's complete now. We're truly international now, aren't we? So, yep. You know, it feels authentic.
It's like the World Championships. Yeah, have you been to many World Championships, Francois?
I'll tell you what, that's the odd thing. That's only the second time I covered the Worlds.
Is that right?
What was the first time?
The first, I really sincerely hope this one is going to be as good as the first one, you know? The only one I covered, because I was working for Reuters. So
1989.
Chambéry. Yeah, Chambéry. Because I was only entitled to cover the ones in France.
And you're not even accredited here, so you're actually covering them. You're covering them from Betty's tea room.
Absolutely.
We're all covering them.
We've organized Francois's accreditation for Betty's tea room. He's in residence. Here, if anybody's right. We should wrap things up, yeah. Shouldn't we?
We should.
Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Subscribe to our newsletter at thecyclingpodcast.com to get all the latest news and special offers delivered straight to your inbox. This episode was edited and produced by Tom Wally.